Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about setting goals. And of course we want to set goals that we can accomplish. Goals that are workable, goals that are practical, because we like theory as well as anybody else, but we're practical people. We like to really do something and really make it count. Mm-hmm. So what goals do we need? What goals are we going to set so that we can go forward? Yeah. Oh, hello, everyone. Thank you all for being here. Yes, thank you. What goals do we need? I'm going to say the first one that we're going to be talking about is we have to have a goal to define success. Because if we don't know what we want, we don't know what success looks like, well, how are we going to get there? How are we going to make a goal that allows us to reach success if we haven't defined it, if we don't know what it is that we want is the key to this, right? Yes. Okay. We can make this a goal because it really is. How about a goal of civility, of creating a convivial atmosphere with respect for everyone, right? Yeah. Yes. Thank you all for being here, all your participation. Wow. How about I'm going to call this defining parameters because it needs to be workable, the goal. Sometimes it's too early, too theoretical. We want to have a goal that's really workable, that we can really use, right? Mm-hmm. This is one of my favorite things to do. We have a goal that to prevent unintended consequences. Let's look at everything and not have something happen and go, oh, my God, we never thought of that. And then we have to start all over again. No, let's try to think about the unintended consequences so that, well, they're not unintended. Then we understand that that might happen and what we should do about it. Mm-hmm. A goal of empathy, yes. Let's talk, people are talking about understanding and really, really getting together. And that's empathy, because empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement, right? Yeah. How about a goal to plan for the future? That's a good idea. And remember that it has to be flexible because, quite frankly, none of us have a crystal ball that works. Unless, of course, you do, and then you don't need this show. So it's kind of a flexible plan for the future with some, well, some contingency spots to it. Mm-hmm. Ooh, this is a good one, too, that we hardly ever talk about, but it's actually very important. On some goals, you need to have the ability to replicate. Yes, you have to set it up so that others can follow in your footsteps and replicate it, right? Yeah, let's talk about that, too. Yes, the ability to replicate is a biggie. Mm-hmm. So let's start. Let's start with defining success. Yes, you need to Muhammad and others are saying that your main thing about defining success is that the initial definition often changes and it needs to be flexible. It's a good point. The initial definition, what we think we want when we start out, especially if it's not real specific, the initial definition oftentimes needs to be flexible because things change. And one of the things that changes is that we find stuff out and we find out what it is that's going on and how come that's not really a workable solution, for example. And we need to know that, but we need to. It needs to work into our definition. Mm-hmm. A lot of you are talking about a mission statement. That is indeed a way to define where you're headed. I don't do one just because people expect to see a mission statement, because they're kind of time-consuming, and they need to be flexible. And the problem is, unless you've got something kind of specific, and then you don't really need a mission statement because you all know what it is you're working towards, right? For example, changing a law and making something legal or different in some way, that's specific. The mission statement needs to be flexible, just like the idea of defining success, because things change, and as you go along, things change, and as you go along, you get to have different experiences and different ideas, and it's important to understand mission statements usually get written down and are kind of debated and like that. If that is a way to define success for this group, if it's a good idea because it will help us, then I'm all for it. But if it's just something that we do because somebody has it in a book on a list that says the first thing you do when you do a negotiation is you make a mission statement, not so much. It has to, in my opinion, whatever you do needs to have purpose, needs to have a why are we doing this. And if the answer is because it has validity and it will help us, then, yeah, that's why we're doing it. But if it's just kind of a matter of course and a piece of process, well, not so much. Oh, good point. Yes, thank you. Uh-huh. Hussein and others are saying that sometimes you get a list of things you're supposed to do because you're dealing with a corporate culture. And I see this quite a bit because I deal corporate a lot. And you're dealing with people who or organizations that have a comfort zone, a way it's always been done. There's a list of things they expect to see, and mission statement is one of them. Yes. Yes, sometimes there's a whole bunch of things. Things that look like a mission statement are like goal statement of goals, statement of progress, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Sometimes you deal with that. There's a kind of a set process that needs to be accommodated. If possible, I try to negotiate not having to spend a lot of time doing that, right? But sometimes the employer, and in this show, remember that on this show we call everybody who had the smarts to bring us in the employer, right? And it is not necessarily indicate an actual employment-employee relationship. It's just a generic term on this show. So remember, on this show we call whoever had the brains to make us the leader, the employer, whoever had the brains to call us in. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are. But sometimes the employer, with that caveat that that's what we're calling them, sometimes the employer has set things that they want to see, sometimes because they are beholden to some sort of a board, some sort of a higher authority, so to speak, and they need to have paperwork. So it's not usually paper anymore. But you know what I mean. They need to have a trail. This shows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And if that's true, then of course we're going to do it. But with the caveat that it is needs to be flexible, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, the question is being asked, who defines success? I'm going to say what you guys say I say all the time. I'm going to say it depends, because it does. Who defines it? Well, sometimes the employer defines it, what they want. And if that is true, and remember, employer is a generic term, but if that is true and the employer wishes to define the parameters of success, you must first negotiate with the employer before you take on the leadership role so that they understand what their definition is. Because if they don't know, then how on earth are you going to fulfill it? Right? Yeah, they need to know what it is that they are doing. They need to know what it is that will satisfy them. They need to know what success looks like before you can be leader of something that doesn't have a path. Right? Right. No. They must be trained first. They must be negotiated with first. Right? Yeah. Because otherwise, you can't lead. You can't reach a successful conclusion to something that doesn't have any kind of direction to it. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the leader defines success. Depends on the group, depends on the tradition somewhat, yes. This is true. To some extent, people at Suki and others are saying that's somewhat cultural, maybe even ethnic cultural. Different types of groups, different types of employers have different definitions of leadership, too. Sometimes they want the leader to just do it, to get it done, to define it, to do it, to make it, to reach the workable outcome, and that's it. That's why we have you. You figure out what it is, and we will follow your lead. That is somewhat cultural. It is a leadership style that if you can't do it, you shouldn't. It is my general leadership style, partially because I'm an American and partially because I deal multinationally, negotiate multinationally, but mainly my core client, my employer, so to speak, is an American-based multinational. That leads to corporate culture and a ethnic culture that is somewhat different than other parts of the world. It is a more democratic thought. The employer usually sets the goal, what they want to see done, right? But they leave it up to the leader and the participants to get it, to do it, to do the actual manifestation, to do the actual work. To figure out how to do that. And the answer is that's leader chosen, right? Because employer says, this is what we'd like, but it's kind of generic, and you tell us what we need to do, and we will do it, right? This is usually when there is a relationship, a reputation of respect and of getting it done, too. And so it's you'd have to be somewhat of an experienced leader to do it. But it is a style, right? And a more autocratic style, that's a more autocratic style than just, this is what we want, we wish to participate in the negotiation. We wish to be kept in the loop. We wish to know when decisions are made and have veto power maybe, right? Yeah. That's employer-led. That's participant-led. It's a more democratic-type process, not politically democratic, but democratic in the fact that everyone participates. And everyone is considered to be equal, including the employer, in that kind of a situation. Who else defines? We did employer, leader, and participants. How about circumstances? And circumstances, well, they might be internal. Funding is a very big circumstance that changes things, right? Employer changing. It is actual. Sometimes you see, especially in corporate, or sometimes people retire or no longer have the position if they're a human being. And sometimes entire companies get taken over by another company that has a different outlook, that has a different idea, and the newbies, the people that are now in charge, must be educated as to why this particular negotiation is important, what it is we're doing and why it's important, right? Yeah, because they will want to know and they will want to look at it to find out, well, what is it that I'm paying for example? What will the outcome be that benefits us? Yeah, benefits me, the employer, the big us, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes circumstances are caused by the media because the media creates public opinion. And the media and public opinion can drive what the goal is and change it and kind of define it and make a difference, especially if the employer, right, generic term, is media sensitive, right? Yeah. Mhm. Yes. This is true too. People are saying that that sometimes the group defines it for the media. That's our goal, isn't it? Right? And that's why I truly advocate Recipe for Peace Now truly advocates, due to experience, that people who are participating not blog, etc., about what we're doing, because we're in the process. And whatever you say in haste in writing will get misquoted somewhere along the line. It'll be bad, if you know what I mean. It'll get misquoted. And then little excerpts will be taken out. Then it'll be repeated, the little excerpts and misquoted. It's like a game. Ever play the game of telephone? Where you whisper something to a person and then you whisper to the next person and then you find out what the last person thinks it was and that's completely different because they didn't catch it, but they interpreted it? No. We're going to have a media spokesperson. Yes. Somebody who deals with not just traditional media, but every kind of media. And also might even put out statements that we've all agreed to and really thought about. Like position statements. I think the media spokesperson needs to be somebody who knows what they're doing. Is it the leader? Is the big question being asked? Not necessarily. Now, it is true that when I do negotiations for issues that have public interest, right? Because that's where you attract the media. I'm usually the spokesperson because I'm fairly well-spoken, right? Yeah, I'm used to it. And I've got kind of a pile of credentials after my name. The media spokesperson is usually somebody who looks good to the media because they want to quote him or her. And one of those ways, I don't think this is true for experts, because I like people with experience and who have done it before. But for media spokesperson, it's kind of nice to have somebody with some credentials who's got some experience in talking, in being able to answer questions in a way that benefits our side, because we're going to define success, and success is really us getting something good, right? Right. Kind of is, yeah. And that doesn't mean that somebody loses. It just means that things get better, or probably all the way around. So the media spokesperson needs to be able to speak, needs to be able to answer questions, needs to look good to both the media and to the employer, right? Yeah. And is it not necessarily us? I pick a media spokesperson for technical stuff who can answer and has better technical degrees than I do. I've got lawyer-type degrees. But sometimes you need somebody to talk to the media who is more, okay, maybe more prominent. Sometimes we have, I'm going to say they're like a celebrity in the arena that we're talking about. They might be local, they might be national. Sometimes we get the backing of a government official, oftentimes a retired government official, somebody who really seems like they know what they're doing, right? Right. And a lot of times the group, the leader, the employer, gets to, not a lot of times, but always, that's why they're the spokesperson, they get together with the media spokesperson and kind of tell them basically what they're going to say, what they should promote, right? Yeah. It's media. It's kind of a game. It's like a marketing game, right? Yeah. And circumstances change, and we want to always be seen as the good side, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes and no. People are asking if this is, if the media spokesperson is the same as experts. We're going to talk a little bit more about experts under the unintended consequences because they help us avoid them. But the question is being asked now, and since this is not a scripted show, we're going to go for it. The media spokesperson could be an expert. In fact, he or she probably is in these particular areas because that's what makes them good at speaking. That's what makes them good, a good representative for us, right? Right, yeah. And but I think an expert does not necessarily need to be a media spokesperson. See, the media spokesperson is an expert because they have gravitas to speak. But not all experts are media spokespeople, right? They don't all represent us. We need them to inform us. We need them to tell us what they think from a more experienced perspective. And in that regard, I am less interested in credentials and speaking ability and how they look than I am about what they know and if they've done this before. Yeah, not necessarily. People are saying if they've been successful before. That would be nice and good, yes. The answer is yes, but it is, I think sometimes the most interesting expert is someone who has failed because they're still interested in helping, they're still interested in getting it done, but they have a unique perspective on what on earth happened, right? And what should be done now, and so we don't have to keep reinventing the wheel. Because with a little luck, they did something that was completely seemed sensible, but ultimately it wasn't. And we would like to not go down that path. We'd like to go down a better path. We want to know. We want to know what happened, why, and what they recommend that we do now. Because a lot of times people are still interested in a successful outcome being created, it's just that for one reason or another, it didn't work out. And usually not because anybody was dumb. Sometimes time actually makes a difference, especially in this modern world. People's opinions change kind of rapidly, due partially to media, due completely pretty much to the internet and to media, and because people see all kinds of different opinions, different kinds of ways of looking at the world, and they go, oh, well, that's interesting. I didn't know. Well, fill in the blank, see? And it is important to understand that, important to understand that things are not always the same. People like their comfort zone. Yes, the comfort zone is how things have always been, right? And sometimes your expert who failed ran up against that, and it was too early in history. Okay, people are asking for an example. And this is a global show, so if it hasn't reached your country, this is just an example. It's not an advocacy. Don't all get excited and send me emails. But as an example, in the United States, where I am most familiar because I live in the United States, although this is a global show and welcome everyone, in the United States, not that long ago, In fact, I can't actually pull up. I think within 50 years, within, what is that, two generations? Is a generation 25 years? I can't remember. Oh, you're going to argue about it. Don't argue about it, but let's say it's. But within the last few generations, historically back, not like 600 years ago, I mean, there was no running water. There was no electricity. People used rocks. But within modern times, I'm going to say 50 years. There's a historic thing coming up. Maybe it's a little more than that. But within the lifetime of people on this planet now, homosexuality was illegal. Never mind kind of frowned upon, actually illegal, right? And yes, true in other countries too. People are voting that it was true in their country also, right? Yes. And so that's a biggie. It was illegal. Now, we've just had within recent memory, just being, you know, it seems like Tuesday, last Tuesday, but no, before then. But within the last 5 years, we have just had a Supreme Court ruling, the Supreme Court being the highest in our land, making homosexual marriage legal. Not just homosexuality legal and not being persecuted, because that's been for a while, but you can have same-sex marriage in our country. Well, that's some change. And if you were trying to get something done during the illegal parts, and if you were trying to get something done during the kind of transitional parts, but you might be an expert, and the reason you failed was because times weren't with you. And now they more are, right? Yeah. Let's not argue about the topic, but think about how things, circumstances change and societal norms change. Things are not always like they always were, right? Yeah. I don't know if you agree with that or not. It makes no difference. It's a fact that circumstances change. What my beloved mother used to say, stuff happens. Yeah, stuff happens, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sometimes circumstances change. More to home, more to right on your doorstep. The main thing that changes, that causes failure and or success, is organizational. We didn't get the process really going. Nobody could. We were all volunteers and, it just didn't work out, but this one's better funded. And did you hear the word funded? Yeah. Mostly what changes and causes failure first and then maybe success, hopefully, on our time, is the backing, whether or not it's got kind of good credentials, good people backing it, whether or not it's considered to be a winner. And the funding that goes with that. It's kind of a money game, too, to a great extent. Mm-hmm. Now, let's work our way down the rest of these, because otherwise we're going to run out of time. But, yes, so experts and media go to defining success and who defines success and when they need to be flexible is the other thing, right? The comfort zone. We also have a goal of civility and creating a convivial atmosphere. This goes with everything. This goes with life. When I take on a new group, I take on any kind of group, first thing I announce is the civility rules, even if I don't think I'm going to need them. Now, the actual announcement changes depending on the group, depending on a bunch of things that have to do with leadership experience. But the crux of the matter is that we're going to act in a civil manner and respect each other. We're going to take turns. Everybody's going to have their say. Everybody's going to be represented. And we're going to act civilly, respectfully to each other. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. I announce this at the beginning always. And then you must enforce immediately, consistently and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. Because if you don't, and you let it get away from you, you won't be able to get it back. It's too late after things have gone uncivil and you've let it kind of lapse to go, remember when I announced at the beginning about the civility rules? Well, now we're going to enforce them. No, too late. You must do it immediately, consistently, and fairly. Even if you have kind of an opinion, about one side is better than the other. No, 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 no. You are the impartial third party. And you, my friends, as leaders, must model civility. You must model civility. You cannot enforce something that you do not do. You must model civility. You must also model enthusiasm, which kind of goes with civility. Because if your participants, your media, your employer, your everybody, if they see that you really think that this is a dog and it's not going to fly, and you lose hope, you lose enthusiasm, they will lose enthusiasm and the whole thing's going to go fail. Yeah, no. You must truly, and not just evidence it also, but you must really think that we're going to get someplace with this. Even if we've had to modify down, and where we're going to get is the first step in the ladder, right? Sometimes the goal is too big, too broad, too world peace, right? If we can get people to act in a civil and respectful manner towards each other during a negotiation, wasn't that one more step towards world peace? Right? Yeah. We don't have control over the four horsemen, but we do have control over this group as leader. And we're going to do it with civility and enthusiasm and respect and with a definite goal in mind that we are going to successfully reach. Mm-hmm. Yes. One of the things, yes, people are asking how on earth you make that work. The answer is that before you take on a leadership role, and I mean this quite sincerely, and even if you're kind of hungry and you could really, really would like to be the leader, you'd like to have this particular position, this particular job, because of good experience, it's not going to help your reputation any if you can't get people to do it, if you can't reach the goals. And one of the ways that you enhance your reputation is by dealing with the employer first. I am very big on this, and I really, really, really think that you should get things in writing. Because sometimes people, the employer, say, yes, of course, you'll have our full support. I hate that sentence. Of course you'll have our full support. In writing, full support. And define it. What does that mean? What is full support? Does that mean if somebody has become uncivil and they're bullying and they're being horrible, does that mean I can get them fired? Ooh, I could get them demoted. I can throw them out of the group and get somebody. Sometimes you need to make an example, right? Yeah. What's your power to enforce civility? What's your power to get this done? Yeah. You have to have the employer answer the question that somebody's going to ask somewhere along the line. And the question is, if I don't respect, behave, do my assignment, if I don't participate wholeheartedly and help with this, what you gonna do about it? That's the question. What you gonna do about it? Yeah, it's an yes, thank you. we're going to get to empathy, which is understanding, not necessarily agreement. And that is one of the W questions. One of the W questions is what, right? Who, what, where, when, and why. What you going to do about it? It's a W question. It's an understanding question. People have to understand that civility is not an option. People have to understand that working towards our goal sincerely, hard, with the best of our abilities, is not an option. This is not just a theoretical exercise. We wish to get it done. You must get this straight with the employer because you need the power to enforce. Right? Right. And in writing, yes. I want to be able to explain. In fact, when I'm making my initial explanations, I work that in kind of a polite way. I don't just threaten people because they haven't done anything bad yet, right? But I let everyone know what you're going to do about it. I let everyone know what the consequences are going to be. I'm going to take a sip of water. Hang on. Pardon me, got so excited I choked. And here's the next question that's being asked about the civility rules and the modeling of enthusiasm. Let's say that you've had an accident, primarily because you might not be so experienced, or maybe you just had a bad day, and somebody goaded you, and you've kind of had it, and you accidentally, as a leader, became uncivil. Because you know that you're the model of civility. We're not going to lose our temper, say anything rude, and like that. We're going to work it around. And we're going to explain the consequences and enforce them. Sometimes you need to set an example. I have done this many times. In fact, my reputation is such that I don't have to actually do it anymore. I can just explain it. Right? Right. You lost it. You blew the model of civility part. Oh, poop. Yeah, you really did. And you know what? The minute you did it, and it's been done, what should you do? The answer is not ignore it and not run away. All right, if you've really done something egregious, you'd have to recuse yourself. But I'm assuming that you did not, because you're not that kind of person, and you're an excellent leader, and you just kind of became testy, right? But it's not irrevocable. It was just one of those things. You must apologize and use yourself as a bad example, because you are. Yes, apologize immediately. And explain that you had accidentally breached the civility rules and that it will not happen again. Right? Yeah. Just use yourself as an example. Yeah. People love that. I haven't actually breached the civility rules in years, but one of these days I will. Let's go on to the parameters of the goal, because otherwise we're not going to get done with all of our areas. And we may or may not reach recipe time, but if not, we'll do them next time. So we've got this goal, and we've defined success, and we've gotten civility and like that, and we're negotiation. What's the parameters, right? How can we make this workable? That's the key to it, because sometimes you see something, a group, and they're kind of okay. Occasionally I do these. I do find this a little annoying, though, and I'm not the right person for it. But occasionally I do it because it's a step. Sometimes you've got a goal that is a step. stepping stone to a bigger goal. And it is, when you're done, when your group is done, it's like a fact-finding. It's a recommendation to a bigger, more important, more powerful, able to do something about it type group. It's a recommendation, and it was meant that way. It's not because it didn't work out and you know, things got funny. It is meant to be a recommendation and not an actual solution. Not, it's not an action group. Thank you. That's what I'm trying to say in this convoluted manner. It's not an action group. It's not a decision-making group. It's a recommendation group. Even the recommendation needs to have workable parameters. You need to be able to say, this is what we recommend be done, right? Yeah. This is what we discovered. This is what we think. You might not be the only group. You might, there might be more, and there might be competing. You know what I mean? It truly, if you're on a fact-finding recommendation-type mission, you shouldn't be the only group. They should be looking in every single direction and under every rock to find out what we're going to talk about next, which is unintended consequences, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the key to this is the parameters part is the agreement that the group, that all of us agree upon our opinion of the next step. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes we get to take the next step, which is great because we're working our way forward. But remember that these things don't necessarily go all at once, right? A lot of times, whatever it is we're trying to solve didn't occur all at once. Therefore, it can't be solved all at once. We need to work on it. We need to give it our best shot, right? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, this is true, too. People are saying circumstances change with this, too. And even the recommendation, sometimes circumstances change midway. Mm-hmm. The main thing that happens with one of these is with the workable is, and if we're kind of in the step stage, step by step, right, and we're building the ladder towards getting to the ultimate goal, which is the successful outcome, sometimes these things take time. And during that time period, something changes. I've had employer changes. I've had group makeup changes, right? Sometimes the world changes technology-wise. Something changes that needs to be accommodated, right? Yeah. Yes, if employer it changes, you need to maybe validate why you need to go forward, right? They might not understand what it is you're doing. Why it is that this activity is so important, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like being a media spokesperson. This is true. People are saying it's like being an internal media spokesperson. I suppose that's true. Let me take a little sip of water. Hang on. Pardon me. The next thing we're going to talk about is preventing unintended consequences. Now, they're unintended, which means you didn't know about them, right? Because it's within the definition of unintended. Let's try to know about them, for God's sake. Let's look all around, right? Yeah. Ooh, good point. Lee and others are talking about preconceived notions. The first thing you need to do is think about your own preconceived notions, the preconceived notions of those you're dealing with. Because sometimes they put blinders on us. And we really think that those preconceived notions are not opinions, they are facts. We think the preconceived notions are facts. They're the way the world is. They are facts. But really, they're kind of not. I know this because other people have competing preconceived notions. Let's look all around. Let's research all sides. Yes, Margaret and others are talking about role playing. I'm a little careful of that. Okay, you've seen me do it, right? Yeah, a lot of you have seen the workshops and seminars where we role play. But that's theoretical. Nobody can really feel insulted or kind of made fun of, right? People are kind of thin-skinned about their positions and their notions of what is right and wrong and their notions of what's going on in the world, right? Right, they're kind of thin-skinned about it. And what you do in class, theoretically, is kind of different. It's an exercise in empathy, which we're going to talk about next time. It's an exercise in understanding. It's the old put yourself in someone else's shoes. In real life, I don't use that as a tool so much, but we try to think about everybody's side, but not play act it. Do you see the difference? Yeah, there's kind of a potential for insult in play acting it, but not a potential insult for talking about it and thinking about it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's research all sides. Let's bring in some experts, right? Yeah, we talked about who's an expert. I like to have competing experts, if it's such a thing, because if everybody agrees, well, that's kind of unusual. You've got competing experts. We like to hear what everybody has to say and what they think the results will be so that we can modify before we implement in case somebody, something, some result we really never thought of could occur. It was going to occur, right? Yeah. So I like to have competing experts. I like to have experts from every side. Tell us what they think about this. Mm-hmm. If we're doing something like changing a law, I also am rewriting something, some sort of rules, some sort of regulations. We do that a lot. I like to have an impartial third party come in and read it and tell us what they think it says. Interpret it. Because sometimes we've gotten too close and we know what it says. We know what it's supposed to do. But just from reading it, which is what the outside world will do in interpreting, not so much. Hey, they can help us as an impartial third party. So that's the kind of expert also who I like to bring in. I like to bring in somebody who is, well, if it's going to go before court, right, for example, in some sort of a process or a law or something, I'd like to have a judge look at it. People retire, and they are experts, and they were formerly judges, right? Or somebody in that field, right? Yeah. I want to know how it will be interpreted in the real world, because we might have worked on it too hard. We might have done too much, if you know what I mean, and not quite gotten all of the thoughts together. Not quite gotten everything set up so that it interprets properly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Next thing we're going to talk about is the goal of having empathy to establish and reach our goals, right? Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Mm-hmm. What we want to do is we want to understand the people we're dealing with. We want to understand the consequences that are now all intended because we've looked at all the unintended ones. And we want to ask the 5W questions, which are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Very important. We want to establish who told you? What did they say? Or in our case, what you're going to do about it? These are just example questions to go with who, what, where, when, and why. Where did you hear it? When did you hear it? Why did you have that response? Are they all asked in that order? Nope, not necessarily. Are they all asked at one time? Not necessarily. That's a judgment call on the leader's part. Somewhere along the line, we want to know the answers, though, for all of them. We want to find out what it is we're dealing with, for heaven's sakes, right? Mm-hmm. So who should we have the empathy for? Mm-hmm. Ooh. Well, let's talk about it at the end of this. People are talking about invisible participants. How about empathy for our invisible participants? What's an invisible participant? Well, it's somebody, we probably should have put them under the expert category. This is a good point. Somebody or a group, sometimes it doesn't have to be a human, an individual human, but somebody would like to tell us something so we don't have an unintended consequence so that we can gain empathy and understanding, right? So that we know stuff. But they don't want to put their name forward. They don't want anybody to know that they told you. But you really want to hear it. You do. So you must have a reputation, because otherwise this isn't going to work, that you will keep the information anonymous. You will bring the information to your people, your participants, your employer, the world, but how you got it, who told you, is going to remain anonymous, right? You must not breach that, because otherwise nobody will ever trust you again. Mm-hmm. My word is really good, and everybody knows it. I have given oral validation. I've agreed to things that later on turned out not to be in my favor, particularly, and I did not renege, even though there was no written document. Very important to have a fabulous reputation. You must not tell if you've got invisible participants. People asking why people do that, because it's one of the W questions, right? We want to have understanding. The answer, in my case at least, is usually because they have some sort of a position, usually an employment position, where they are the status quo now. And they would say secretly think it would be better if things changed, but they don't want to back change publicly because they don't want to lose their position. And it helps in case things go a little south, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who else do we need empathy? Who do we need empathy for besides our invisible participants? Everybody. Yeah. Mainly for the people we're dealing with, for the employer. What is their goal? What's their agenda that goes with that goal? Remember, we're going to define it. We need to understand it, right? And if you can't understand it and it's just murky, I'm going to advise you not to take on that leadership role, because it's not going to work out well, and it's going to hurt your reputation. Mm-hmm. I think you should have some understanding for yourself, too, right? And really think about your preconceived notions. Think about what you really think and whether or not it's impacting the negotiation and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not saying one way or another, right? But you got to think about yourself, too, and your own preconceived notions, because you are the third party impartial in this. You are the most important of all. You are the one that has to really hold this together. Hang on, we're holding it together, right? Right. Mm-hmm. What else do we need to do when we're setting goals? We have to think about the future. Right? Yeah. I can't stress enough that the future is flexible. People seem to think that the future is set in stone. Have you ever heard anybody say, fill in the blank, and now I'm set for life? It's so weird. Women do that with marriage, even though, statistically speaking, maybe not so much. But they say that. They say, I've gotten married. I'm set for life. Let's think about that for a moment. But businesses do it too. They get set for life. Nope, we need to be flexible. Mm-hmm. The key to it is to be able to work together, right? And sometimes, it's not our job to heal people of their deep-seated biases, which they really think are facts and not opinions. They were taught to them maybe early on, right? Maybe something somebody very respected taught them. Or their experience has been funny because they looked at it from a peculiar perspective, from our perspective, right? Not peculiar from theirs. Right? Yeah. And the key is not to really cure people of their biases, but to make a working solution so that when things need to be fine-tuned, when things need to be brought to the forefront, these people can say, well, I still don't like, fill in the blank, but this person, these people, this group, I've worked with them before, and they're different. They're an exception. They're exceptional people, right? That's fine. Good enough. Let's work together. Let's get it done. Let's get the good for everyone. Don't have to like each other. Just have to work together. And I'm going to tell you something that people seem to think is a surprise. And I don't know why it's a surprise. But I tell people, the faster we get to success, the faster we get this done, the faster we can stop seeing each other and stop meeting until the next time. It's amazing. People go, it's a good point. Remember also to celebrate each success. Very important point, because people forget how far away they were when they started. It's natural. It seems like, God, this is taking forever. But it's not really. It's just the process, right? What we're doing is we are working our way towards success, and that can't be beat. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the ability to replicate. This is very important in some instances, especially, I live in a very big country with a lot of states, right? And each state has their own law. Now, the state law is underneath the federal law, which is the overcompassing law. But each state is allowed to make their own laws. And they vary quite a bit from state to state, surprisingly enough. Yeah, it kind of depends on a variety of things, but it's somewhat how liberal and about what their politicians are and like that. Just take my word for it that there is a divergence. There's difference. And sometimes one state starts something, and then other states look at it and they go, we'd like to replicate that. So you have to keep some records. You have to keep some writing. You have to do it so that it's a good example to us all, because quite frankly, if you replicate enough, then more states do it. Yeah, it kind of makes the ripple effect. Yeah, there's always some that are last and some that are first, because it depends how you feel about your comfort zone. And to a great, some areas in the United States are more homogenous than others, and some are more urban. It's somewhat liberal and non-liberal, but some states tend to be more proactive. Okay, we'll call it more proactive, and that needs to be replicated, right? And so you show, this worked out. It was a crazy-ass idea, but it worked out. Now let's go further. This happens in companies, too. One branch, for example, whatever you want to call them, one area, does something that should be replicated throughout the organization. And the other pieces of the organization hold their little breath, and they watch and see if it's a good thing and if everybody likes it, and the employer thought it was all right and like that. And then they go, oh, I think we'd like that. Look, there's precedent for it, right? Yeah, let's do what they did. You have to be able to say what you did so that it can be replicated, right? Right. My friends, we are out of time. We're going to have to not do the recipes. We did have a lovely discussion, though. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.